Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the currently not-so-sunny Florida Space Coast. That's right, it is 50-some degrees, overcast, very chilly by Florida standards. Had to throw on a hoodie this morning to walk my dogs. The struggle is real, folks. Not liking this. I want my sun back. But speaking of the sunny Florida Space Coast, I'm delighted that there is a local listener, Erica from Satellite Beach. Satellite Beach is a lovely beachside community just about 15-minute drive southeast of where I reside and broadcast from in Vieira, Florida. Very pleased to have a local listener send in an email. And also, such a relevant one, because this is something that I've actually been really thinking about over the past few weeks, and I want to move on it. And so let's dive right into Erica's email. Dear Dr. Roger, I love your show and catch each episode by archive when commuting to work. Would you consider a regular time and day to air so that I can know exactly when to tune in to new shows? Thank you,
Erica. So, I think, you know, previously the way we've been is just kind of haphazard, and, you know, as a result, the vast majority of listeners tune in by archive because no one really ever knows when I'm going to post new episodes. But as you've noticed, I've been committed to regular broadcasting, and, you know, the hardest thing was I was so delighted to have Dr. Karen Lewis as a co-host, and God, I still miss her terribly. You know, definitely want to reconnect with her, but it's just meshing our schedules so challenging because of, you know, she's a very busy practicing veterinarian. I'm a very busy practicing veterinarian. We're both running businesses, and it's just so challenging. So literally, we would plan shows by, she would just randomly text me, "Hey, I'm free for an hour tonight. Want to broadcast?" "Sure, I'm in." Or, "Nope, how about tomorrow?" And it was really just like that. We would just broadcast whenever we could, and that's kind of been our paradigm. And I kind of carried on even me doing this solo right now. So, yes, I want to absolutely get back into or look into a regular broadcasting day and time. I do know that having been a commuter in the past, luckily, I only really commute sometimes, you know, 30, 40 minutes to my South County location, which, you know, even with that commute, I tire of just listening to music all the time. And so it's nice to tune in to other stuff. I remember back in the day in New York when I had more substantial commutes to certain locations I was working at, I really tired of music. And back then I was a pretty big Howard Stern fan, so I'd listen to Howard Stern. It's just nice to just kind of change it up. And so I think, you know, during morning commute would be pretty good timing, but I'd like to get consensus before I go there. And so I'm just going to encourage all of the listeners to send us an email, comments@web-dvm.net. Let us know a preference. Would it be morning? Would it be evening? What day of the week would be best? You know, I know of one technician who has emailed us in the past who likes to listen to the podcast on Sundays and during, you know, her run. She goes for a run and throws her headphones on, and that's what she listens to. So, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, you know, that facilitates your ability to listen to podcasts, let us know, and we'll try to gain some consensus, and we'll make a decision on that next week, and we'll certainly post it on the show page and at Spotify and all that good stuff. So thank you for your email, Erica, and maybe I'll run into you sometime. I'm down in Satellite Beach all the time. Good surf spot down there. So let's dive into our topic. So anti-vaxxers, you know, they've always been around. You know, the folks that just have an aversion to vaccines, whether it be for themselves, for their children, for their pets. And, of course, I'm here to talk about pets. Always been there, and I know exactly why, but there has been in the last 2 years an uptick of anti-vaxxers, and to the extent that people are even wanting to opt out of rabies, which I'm gonna touch on that shortly. But at the very least, most anti-vaxxers, even though they would forego and decline against medical advice to not vaccinate their pets for endemic and core vaccines that are recommended by both the American Veterinary Medical Association and the American Animal Hospital Association, they would at least go for rabies. So this new phenomenon of not even opting for rabies, it's very, very new, and it's very unusual. And I think it's all coming, it's being fueled by the polarization of the coronavirus vaccine. There are those that opt in, which seems like a majority of Americans opted in for it, and there's others that utterly refuse. And the reasons behind it, can vary from political issues. It's, you know, it's my freedom, it's my choice, you can't make me do anything, to being suspicious of technology that is not new, but technology that really has not been discussed prior to or made publicly aware prior to the pandemic. And these opinions, honestly, have clearly spilled over into the pet world, because this uptick is no coincidence. And so let's talk about the consequences of this. So what do we vaccinate for? So on the feline side, we vaccinate for rabies, obviously. We vaccinate for panleukopenia virus, which is feline parvo. It's a virus that attacks the intestinal tracts. It also attacks the bone marrow and the body's ability to make white blood cells, which compromise the immune system, and red blood cells, which causes anemia. So very serious disease, has about a 30% mortality rate, and treating it can be very expensive because it requires isolation. It's a very contagious disease, and isolation facilities are not cheap, and so they're usually referred out to a special facility for that. The other two diseases generally in the core vaccine that we do once every 3 years as part of panleukopenia is also Khaleesi virus, causes pretty nasty upper respiratory infection in cats, and herpes virus, which also causes conjunctivitis of the eyes and a pretty nasty upper respiratory infection in cats. So then for cats that do go outside, we do recommend feline leukemia. Feline leukemia is a retrovirus. Retrovirus in a similar family as HIV in people, and so that attacks the immune system apparatus. When they get it, it's not a mortality rate, it is a foregone conclusion that they will die from feline leukemia. So there's no treatment for it. So cats that go outside, generally I reserve that vaccine for those particular cats because they really need to be in contact directly with an infected cat to get that particular disease. It's not airborne. So they don't, like other retroviruses, does not survive well in the environment. On the canine side, we are vaccinating for the core vaccine, DHPP, distemper, hepatitis, parvo, and parrot influenza. Distemper is a viral disease that has a 30 to 40% mortality rate. It attacks the brain and the lungs, causing viral pneumonia and encephalitis, seizures, whatnot. Hepatitis is an adenovirus that attacks the liver, and the parvo is just like we discussed in feline panleukopenia, same thing, attacks the intestines and the bone marrow, and also carries about a 30% mortality rate. And then on a yearly basis, we recommend leptospirosis. That is a disease that is spread by the urine of squirrels, rats, and other rodents. It has an uncanny ability to live in the environment, survive in the environment for days, especially if there's fresh standing water present, so lakes, ponds, puddles, things like that. And then, of course, there is the kennel cough vaccine. That's kind of more lifestyle specific. If patients are in regular contact with other dogs, dog parks, dog shows, agility, grooming, kennel stays, anything like that, we do recommend a kennel cough. Can be particularly nasty. That's whooping cough in people. And then I'm not vaccinating for it as much, but there is canine influenza virus, which has like a 10% mortality rate. So it's one of those nasty strains of flu. The outbreaks have kind of fallen off in my area. It's really haven't seen much play there since 2018. So I'm really only vaccinating those patients that attend facilities that require them, such as like doggy daycare, things like that. But it's not one that I'm necessarily considering a core vaccine at this point. And then, of course, there's rabies, right? And that's going to be ubiquitous. So As far as these diseases are concerned, leptospirosis is zoonotic, but it would be very rare and unusual for a person to get it. Zoonotic refers to diseases that people can catch from animals. And so outside of leptospirosis, all of those other diseases are not zoonotic, and leptospirosis is very rarely zoonotic. Rabies, as we well know, is zoonotic. People can absolutely get rabies. And so, you know, that's something we're going to focus on today. So in my 20-year career, you know, I have not had people opting out of vaccines to this level. And I also want to focus on rabies because certainly rabies at least is something that people have not been asking to opt out of. And for the first time in my 20-year career, we had to call meetings at our clinics, both my north and south location here in the county, to set up a policy on rabies vaccination. That if there's, you know, people that there's no medical contraindications for the patient, and I'll talk about, you know, certain diseases where, you know, I'm going to recommend a medical exclusion for any vaccines, including rabies, but with no medical exclusion, they're opting out of it, and so it's a voluntary opt out. It is state law, so it puts us in a very dicey legal situation. It puts us in a very dicey human health situation. Rabies is a disease that once the patient's showing clinical signs of the disease, has a 100% mortality rate. If it's an animal that has it, we are going to euthanize that animal. However, if it's a person, they're going to die an agonizing death within 10 days of showing clinical signs. It's nothing to take lightly. It's very serious. Here in Florida, our local branch of the USDA sends us out fax alerts whenever there's a positive rabies, whether it be a companion animal and whether it be a wild animal. We're going to get a rabies alert, so that way we're on alert if it happens to be in the communities that we serve, and we can warn our own clients that, hey, this is a major issue, and if your pet is not up to date, please make an appointment ASAP, because there's been rabies, I don't want to say outbreaks, but rabies incidents in our community, and it happens all the time. And so we want to be very careful with that. But what's blowing my mind is there's people with indoor-outdoor cats. So, you know, cats go outside and then come in the house and interact with the family. And, you know, Lord only knows what wildlife they're interacting with. There's raccoons everywhere because the way our construction is here, we live in and among conservation areas that are preserved for wildlife. And it's aesthetically beautiful, and there's trails to walk through. But, you know, it means that our cats, if they go outside, are necessarily going to be in contact with wildlife. And that includes raccoons and bats and other things, that other animals that are known to carry rabies. So to me, it's just insanity. If you have a perfectly healthy cat, goes in and out of the house, you're an anti-vaxxer, at least do rabies. So with my clinics, what we decided to do was, with consensus among the staff, was, hey, you know what? We're not going to put ourselves at risk over a person just refusing the vaccine that are perfectly safe. The technology has been fine-tuned. It's nothing new. It's not like, you know, messenger RNA technology. There's no boogeyman. It's the same technology that's been used since I graduated, only it's more fine-tuned to decrease reactivity, and they're fine-tuning it on an ongoing basis. Rabies has not been safer in my lifetime. So there's no reason in a perfectly healthy animal to not do it. And so if you're going to opt out, you cannot be seen at my clinics. That's just the bottom line. We're only going to make exclusion for legitimate medical contraindicated patients. So that would be patients with autoimmune disease, patients that have cancer, they're living with manageable cancer. No, we're not going to toy and mess around with those immune systems. And by the way, most of these patients have had some level of rabies vaccination in their lives, so there might be some residual immunity in these patients. That's also what makes us more comfortable to allow those exceptions. And those exceptions, though, are generally, you know, few and far between. So, you know, that's where we're at with rabies. I'm just not going to see that patient. I have technicians that are not vaccinated for rabies. Most veterinarians are, because we have vaccination programs. in vet school where you can get the vaccine at no cost. I was vaccinated, and so, you know, I've had a series of three of them, and still, though, you know, no vaccines are 100%, and I don't want to be, you know, potentially bitten by a potentially rabid animal. It's just, and I certainly don't want that for my technicians. You know, so I'm not budging on that. As far as the other diseases, well, you know, that's really on you. That's on the pet owner. If they want to take the risk of leptospirosis, which carries high mortality rate, if they want to take the risk of distemper, parvo, hepatitis, all the things we talked about, panleukopenia for cats, you know, that's on them to do so. We do require them to sign a waiver that they're doing this against medical advice. But, you know, that's their prerogative. It puts their pet at risk. But does it affect other pets? Yes, it potentially does. So one of the wonderful things about my area where I live is it's new construction, it's a new community, and they're really putting a big focus on a dog-friendly environment. Just last night, I was out to dinner, and there were dogs that were in the establishment, you know, sitting next to their owners and, you know, enjoying a night out with their owners, and it's just so cool to see. We have walking paths all over the place. We have, as I said, trails that go through the conservation areas, and we've got these beautiful, sprawling dog parks that are just so much fun. They got, you know, little obstacles for the dogs and tunnels for them to run through, and they're so hygienic with that state-of-the-art AstroTurf, and there's water stations, and, you know, with all that, it's great, but it does increase our dog's susceptibility to infectious disease, and it's just a fact of medical science. The more congregated people, dogs, cats, you know, name your animal that can catch a disease, the more congregated they are on a regular basis, the more likely they are to get in contact with some of these infectious agents. So that does affect what we call herd immunity. And so, yes, by not vaccinating your dog, you potentially put others at more risk because we're losing some of that herd immunity. Case in point. Distemper, the virus that attacks the brain and the lungs, 30% mortality rate. I'm sorry, 30 to 40% mortality rate. Before the advent of the vaccine, that disease was known to wipe out entire populations and cities. Of entire populations of cities and towns of their dogs. I mean, it was that bad. It was a major tragedy when that occurred. A lot of these dogs aren't the same even after they recover. They have some residual brain injury. They might have scarred in their lungs. It's not a pretty disease. And the last time I saw a case was in New York in 2004. That's actually, I left New York to come move to the Space Coast in 2004. That's the last time I saw a distemper. So we've believed that because of the effective vaccination program that we didn't necessarily eradicate the disease, because it is out there, but most veterinarians you'll talk to haven't even seen a case of distemper. I'm one of the rare ones that actually has, and I manage a case in an unvaccinated puppy as a chocolate Labrador Retriever. And it was very, very sad to see, because it was so preventable. Why this owner chose not to vaccinate this puppy is beyond me, but the puppy got distemper, and that's the one and only case I'd ever seen. Well, as rare as it is, we got a report a couple weeks ago from one of our referring overnight emergency clinics that they actually had a distemper case in their isolation unit. And so they're letting us know because they want us to educate our clients that, you know, this is out there in the community. Case in point, look, this dog just got this, and it has a 40% chance of dying from it. And even if the dog survives it, it's a situation where its health may never be the same again. So, you know, a disease that was, you know, once considered very rare to see, well, guess what? We're seeing it again. And that's one I've heard of locally, but I'm hearing it among colleagues of mine from all over the country that there's been an uptick in distemper. There's also been an uptick in parvo. Parvo, man, I would go sometimes 2-3 years without seeing a case of parvo come through my door. I've had two cases in the last month, two cases in a month, and I'm seeing maybe 4 or 5 a year, which, you know, again, it's not coincidence that with the uptick of anti-vax, it's kind of broken out, you know, as a side effect of the pandemic, we're seeing more parvo. And yeah, your dog may be vaccinated, but somebody's dog that's not vaccinated is still bringing that disease potentially around your dog. And that's going to mean that your dog could potentially still get parvo. No vaccine is 100%. We've heard of, you know, the great efficacy of the coronavirus vaccine, approaching upwards of 90%+, I guess, in the Pfizer one. And yet people still got coronavirus. I got coronavirus. I'm fully vaccinated, the full complement of vaccines, and I still got the what appeared to be the Omicron strain a couple of months ago. So it does affect other dogs. And so, you know, there is a certain responsibility to the canine community and respect to other pet owners that comes along with vaccination programs. But, you know, regarding the rabies, though, that's just absolute madness to not go there. So let's talk about medical exclusions real quick. In addition to people wanting to opt out of the vaccines so they don't get in trouble with the sheriff's department should they be found to not have a rabies tag, or should their animal potentially injure someone and break skin and has to be reported to the sheriff's department. By the way, by law, as healthcare providers for animals, we are bound by law to report those. If they're up to date on rabies, great. If they're not up to date on rabies, well, why? And whether or not they get a fine will depend on, was there a legitimate medical exclusion? Well, people are asking me for just completely made up bogus medical exclusions. Just yesterday, I had an owner ask me for a medical exclusion for her dog from rabies because she's too old. And I said, that's not, too old is not a valid medical exclusion. Your dog's otherwise perfectly healthy. We just did blood work last month. Your dog is doing great. She's 15 years old. But she actually needs vaccines more at this point in her life than she did when she was younger. Her immune system's not what it used to be. And I explained to this lady, look, why was the coronavirus vaccine, when supply was limited, only reserved for 65 and older? Because the older population is most susceptible to severe disease that could lead to hospitalization and death. And so it was reserved for those patients. And really the same applies to dogs and cats, that the older they get, the weaker their immune systems are. They actually, vaccines are more important, even more important. So I wouldn't provide the exclusion. It's not legitimate. The real kicker one was I had a lady that came in, I want to say about 8 months ago, and the dog really wasn't eating, and I tried to open this poor little Maltese's mouth, 12-year-old Maltese, and I mean, these teeth are just rotting out of her face. It was just a complete disaster in that mouth. I ran blood work, and her liver enzymes were elevated. Her white blood cell count was elevated from the infection. The liver enzymes, I followed up with an ultrasound, and I determined that the liver looked architecturally normal. And so I hypothesized that, you know, all of the toxin being ingested by this patient was possibly spiking the liver enzymes and certainly driving the white cell count. And I told this lady that, you know, if we don't do something about these teeth, we could start looking at pathological fractures of the jawbone and major oral surgery to repair structural issues to your poor little dog's face. And she said, oh, I feel so badly, but I just couldn't have a dental done. This was remarkable. She said, my quote-unquote holistic vet down in South Florida, she just moved to my area from South Florida, said that she had a severely compromised immune system and I shouldn't do any anesthesia or vaccines on her. And I said, okay, what was his basis for that? She goes, I don't know. He just told me she had a severely compromised immune system. I said, okay, well, at any rate, you have no choice but to do this dentistry. And by the way, no, she has got no vaccines on board, but, you know, let's get this fixed first. I don't want to compromise an already compromised immune system. Very nice little dog. I just told everyone to be very careful. We have a medical reason not to update a rabies vaccine. So let's just, you know, make sure we don't get scratched or accidentally bitten, and we will move forward with this patient. And then after she recovers, we can talk about getting her up to date on immunizations. And that was the end of the discussion. So lo and behold, we repair the teeth. I had to pull every tooth in her mouth. But, that was the result of the lack of dentistry. Closed it all up and healed up beautifully. The white blood cell count normalized. And lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, the liver enzymes normalized. So my hypothesis was correct that the teeth were driving all of that. So the patient completely recovers, and then she comes in for just, you know, a little ear infection months later. And the technician pointed out, hey, you know, so-and-so, this lady never really followed up with updating at least the rabies. So I had the discussion with her, and it was after our policy meetings about moving forward with requiring rabies vaccinations for our patients. And I had the discussion with her. She goes, oh, no, but her compromised immune system. I said, ma'am, I don't know where your vet was coming from, but clearly your dog does not have a compromised immune system. She spiked a white blood cell count in the process of fighting a severe chronic infection in her mouth. And secondly, now that the infection has cleared, her white blood cells have normalized. She's actually shown herself to have a very strong immune system. So compromised immune system makes absolutely no medical sense. I have no medical reason why your dog should not at least be rabies vaccinated. You can opt out of everything else, but you cannot be seen here, or she cannot be seen here, unless she gets updated. And she goes, oh, no, but, and she, you know, she's not budging on this. She says, oh, no, but, you know, I really like you. I love coming here. I love this clinic. You did such good work on her. And I said to the lady, he's like, you know, I really like you too. You're a delightful person. You have a delightful little dog. But, you know, this is a human health risk that and a legal issue as well that I'm just not prepared to compromise this clinic over. This will be our last visit. You know, and unless you reach a point where you're ready to vaccinate your dog. And then so she said, well, I have to really think about this. And she went up front and she got checked out. And she said to the receptionist, well, I'm not sure if you're going to be seeing me again. I'm not sure I'm willing to do a rabies vaccine. And so be that. You know, it is what it is. Again, a very nice lady. I think she was a bit, I don't know, misguided by this particular veterinarian, if I'm to believe her. She seems like a trustworthy person. It's very unfortunate that somebody in our profession would put those kind of ideas in her mind, inventing immune compromise when none was present. Just very, very hokey to me. But, you know, that's where we're at. So, you know, this is going to become increasingly an issue. You know, when does the vaccine issue become less of an issue? I don't know the answer to that. You know, it's still a very polarizing issue, but I will tell you this. I'm going to close with this. Let's be very clear that the technology of our vaccinations, whether it's rabies, DHPP, FVRCP for cats, feline leukemia, leptospirosis, Bordetella, bronchoseptica, whatever vaccine we're looking at, this is not new technology, folks. It's technology that has been around since I graduated veterinary school. It has been perfected ever since. Vaccination rates even back then, vaccination reaction rates back then were exceedingly rare. They've become even more rare as these pharmaceuticals have fine-tuned their product to make them safer and less reactive. And so we're not talking about messenger RNA technology, and I'm not going to get into all of that. Messenger RNA technology is not new, but it's new to those of us who, you know, never heard of it until it was going to be the vaccine for the modality for the pandemic. But it's not new, but put that aside. A lot of people have never heard of it, and it's concerning to put something in your body that, you know, seemed to have been kind of rushed out there. But none of this technology on the veterinary side has been rushed. It has been vetted. It has been used for decades. It is good technology and it's ever safer. And every year we do it, new vaccine lines come out and they're ever safer and safer and safer and safer. And they're more effective. And so they keep getting better. So, you know, we're not throwing anything new at your pets. And if you have a healthy pet, please consider the full complement of AVMA and AHA, that's the American Veterinary Medical Association and the American Animal Hospital Association, guidelines for core vaccination protocols for diseases that are endemic in your area. So, controversial topic. I can't wait to see the emails about this one. Please keep them coming. I look forward to deciding on a regular time that I'm going to broadcast to you, a regular day and time. And I look forward to your suggestions on that, and I'll be unveiling that next week. So best wishes to everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.